Okay, let's get started. How am I doing so far?
Great.
Thumbs up?
Yeah.
So how many people already do, are we ready on the recording? Okay, so how many people already do Visual Studio today? Wow, okay. How many people don't do Visual Studio? Okay, so this was meant to be a sort of an introduction to Visual Studio. So some of you may be a little bored. How many people are, the ones that are doing Visual Studio, how many people are doing it with Windows Phone? Okay, so less. Okay, all right, so that's not so bad. Okay, so we're gonna spend the next, I'll try and go a little quicker. We'll spend the next 45 minutes, we'll try and catch up a little bit at a time on Visual Studio, and how to build Windows Phone applications with Visual Studio 2010. So these are the topics. We'll quickly go through the platform and talk about the different parts of the application platform, specifically the Windows Phone application platform. We'll talk about the developer tools, where you can get them, how much it's going to cost you, secret, zero. What is Visual Studio 2010, what's the emulator, and we'll spend some time on some of the newer tools like the profiler that's in the latest release of Visual Studio. Okay, so let's start with the Windows Phone application platform. You can kind of think of the platform divided up into two areas. One is the stuff that's in the cloud that you're going to access via web services in one way or another. And then the other stuff that's sort of on your desktop that you're going to use to develop. And so if you look at the cloud services, for instance, there are certain cloud services that you will use to develop your application. And there are cloud services that we provide. So for instance, we have our own notification service where we do push notifications for you. We'll spend some time talking about that later today. There's a location service where you can request information about the location of the device and so on. There's things like, and so those are things that you would do as part of your development. And then there's other services like deployment, identity, maps that are just sort of part of the experience that you'll just have. And then there's other services like Windows Azure, which are a little bit more generic, that you would use perhaps to host your web service applications in the cloud. There's also portal services, and these are kind of important. It's recently opened to the Danish marketplace, and so you now have access to these things like registering as a developer, certification of your applications, publishing your applications, getting paid, kind of important, if you're making money with apps. So all of that stuff is part of portal services. So that's sort of the cloud part of the platform. On the client side, there's two pieces. There's the runtime stuff, and then there's the tooling, a piece that helps you build applications for the runtime stuff. So we're gonna spend a lot of time talking about a lot of these different topics. Unfortunately, in a day, we can't cover everything, but we'll give you a really good grounding today as to the typical things that you would need to build applications. Things like sensors, media, access to data, location, notifications. And like I said, we'll spend some time on these various things. There's two different frameworks in the platform. We'll talk about those in a couple minutes. Everything is based on .NET, and everything works within a managed sandbox. So every application that is deployed to the device, whether it's deployed from Marketplace or sideloaded from the PC, works within its own sandbox. And so it can't interfere with the experience of the end user, it can't interfere with other applications. It's a security feature. And then there's a various other pieces that are kind of related, as you can imagine, Xbox and Windows 7. The tooling is what we're gonna spend most of the time talking about in this session. We're gonna talk about Visual Studio, we'll talk about XNA Game Studio. Those are kind of related, they're sort of embedded together and integrated tightly together. We'll also spend maybe a few minutes talking about Expression Blend. That's more of a designer tool, and so not something we're gonna spend a lot of time today, but it is handy to have. And you do get it as part of the SDK, and so you should take advantage of it. It's just a handy tool to have. Even as a developer, it's handy. The emulator, we'll spend some time on that. We'll talk about it when we get to it. So anyway, so let's talk about what do you do with all that stuff. So the process of building apps for the phone is pretty straightforward. You take those development tools, that piece that I just showed you a couple of seconds ago, and you build a ZAP file, an XAP file. And that XAP file is actually pretty straightforward. It's actually a zip container of all sorts of stuff. What kind of stuff? Things like DLLs, things like images, icons, all of that good stuff is all packaged up into a ZAP file, which has your application's name on it. That ZAP file can be pushed to the emulator for testing and for debugging and all of that good stuff in development. You can also, as part of development, when you're in development, you can sideload that application to a device, and we encourage that for testing and so on. Once it's done, you submit it to what we refer to as App Hub. And App Hub is that portal services that's in the cloud where we maintain the marketplace. And when you submit that application to App Hub, we do all sorts of packaging behind the scenes. We also do verification, both automated verification and manual verification, that you are adhering to the policies that we have in marketplace. And so you're not doing any bad stuff, either for the end user or for the device. Those are the two things. We talked about this earlier. We try and maintain user experience and the health of the device. So those are two things that we monitor. If your application passes certification, then it's made available via the marketplace, and the consumer can then download via the marketplace, either on a device, on the PC, in the Zune desktop, or on the web. There's a web catalog as well. So pretty straightforward. In order to get started, the first thing you need are, yes? I missed the first part of your question, I'm sorry.
I want to apply application for test among 10.
Ah, yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah, so the question was, I have an application and I want to beta test it with a few users, 10, 15, 100, whatever it is. Can I put it on a website somewhere to make it available to them? And yes, that website is called App Hub. You submit it to App Hub, and there's different kinds of submissions that you can make. The primary one is submit it for publication, but you can also submit it as a beta application, in which case you don't go through certification, but you also don't go into the catalog. The app is then submitted to the marketplace. It's available in the marketplace in a separate area. We give you a link. You can email that link to your end users, and the end user can then, you have to have their Windows Live ID, and you have to give them permission. If you give them permission, they can then install the app, play with it, give you feedback, rate it, all that good stuff. And then at some point, you would submit and publish, and then it would be made available to the general public. Does that make sense? There is a third type. We're going to talk about this later, but just so we have it, which is called private distribution, which is kind of halfway in between. Private distribution means you submit to the marketplace, but it doesn't become public in the catalog. The only way to get to it is via knowing that deep link, that URL. And if you know the URL, then you can download it. So it's kind of a way of hiding an app, but if someone knows the URL, they can get to it. So there's no access control, but it does provide you sort of an interim in the meantime. That answer your question? Great. Any other questions on that? Okay. Where were we? Right. Windows Phone developer tools. The first thing, if you remember nothing from today, the one thing you do need to remember is create.msdn.com. Everything that's good happens at create.msdn.com. So you register there as a developer. You go there for your developer tools. You go there to unlock your device. If you're a developer and you've registered, you can unlock your device to sideload. You go there for reference documentation. You go there for submitting your app. You go there to get your app certified and see the certification results. You go there to see how many downloads. Everything happens at App Hub. And the site, did I mention it? It's create.msdn.com. Okay. So what do you get as part of the download? The download includes a couple of things. Visual Studio 2010 Express Edition, which is a full version of Visual Studio that allows you to do development. It also includes Expression Blend for Windows Phone, which is a special version of Expression Blend that allows you to do design type stuff on Windows Phone applications. There is the Windows Phone registration tool that allows you to register your device, essentially unlock your device so you can sideload, and the application deployment tool so that you can actually take your ZAP file that you have in on your desktop and sideload it to your device. So Visual Studio, I think most of you know, it's an IDE for creating apps and games, and then Expression Blend is a visual design tool. And we'll spend a couple of minutes looking at that. I guess the first thing is let's actually just build just a quick Windows Phone app. So this is Visual Studio for those of you that have never seen it. I think there's only a handful. When I hit File, New, Project, there's a number of different types of project. I'm actually running Visual Studio 2010 Professional. And so if you, as a developer, are already running Visual Studio 2010 Professional, you'll still get the Express Edition, but you're more than likely will all of that SDK stuff works fine in Professional, which is, it just sort of integrates. And by the way, we did try and get the audio fixed. The audio guys are gonna come at the next break and we'll spend some time fixing that so you don't get that horrible echo. I apologize for that. So these are the different templates that we have available. Of course, there's all sorts of other templates for building Windows applications and web applications and all that good stuff. But we're gonna spend our time in Windows Phone. There's really two areas in Windows Phone. The first one is Silverlight. So I just created a quick Silverlight application. I'm going to give it a name of Phone App 14, which is very unique. It's asking me which version of the OS I want to target. I can still build apps that work on the older 7.0. I'm not sure why you would want to, but in some cases you might still want to target 7.0 devices. Although we're finding that over time, there are less and less users that are using 7.0, as you can imagine. And so I clicked OK, and you now see a couple of things going on. You have the Solution Explorer. It's actually created a solution, and in that solution there's a project, and in that project there's a bunch of files. We're going to spend some time going through that. And it's already loaded the first page that it's created. Different templates create different types of applications. In this case, this application is just an application that has a single page. And so that page, it names it mainpage.xaml. I know it's hard to read, but I can't change that font. I can control this font. I can't control that one, unfortunately. And then as I click on different things on the page, I also have the property inspector. So if I click on page name, for instance, I can now go and change the text for page name over here. Now, one of the things you may have noticed is that there's some text in the middle here. This page, this document, or this XAML document is what we refer to it as, Extensible Application Markup Language, is how we control what's in that document. So anything you do visually is actually round trip updated in your XAML. And you can actually work in XAML. Some people actually prefer to work in the XML. And so for instance, if I wanted to change the page title from page name to hello, you see that I change it in the text. And if I come here and change it, right, so now I'm using a property inspector to do the same thing and say hello world and click off of that, and you see it's updated. So you can work in either one. They both work, whatever you prefer. It's just sometimes easier to work in the textual form. Sometimes it's easier to work in the property inspector. There's also one thing that's kind of hidden because I don't have a lot of room. Closed it by mistake. There it is, the toolbox. And so the toolbox are all my controls that I can play with. And I have just the standard ones installed right now. So for instance, if I wanted to add a button to this part of the text, I would just double click and it's added there. Or I can click and drag it and add it wherever I want. And now I can go and change the content and say, hello world. So Visual Studio allows me to control a bunch of things, and these are the different things that form the ZAP file. So as you can imagine, the XAML and the code behind the XAML become DLLs, and then you also have things like JPEG. So for instance, my splash screen, when my application actually starts, there's a splash screen image, and there's a default one that comes, just hide it, and you'll see that the splash screen there is just an image, right? It's just a JPEG, and so I can do that. There's also, this is my standard tile, it's background.png, and that's just my tile, and then there's a icon, which is the one in the app list, and I'll show you where these go in a couple of seconds. So let's actually run this application. It doesn't actually do anything, but it's very exciting. And so here what it's doing is it's launching my emulator. By the way, this is a special skin that I just added just for fun. Because we're here in Nokia, I just added the skin. The normal one is just a generic, it looked like my engineering device that I had earlier. But since we're in Nokia, I figured it would be fun to add this. So, and you can do that. There's a bunch of them on the internet for different types of devices. And so here's my application. And you notice that it's running. And so if you were quick, you'll notice that the splash screen came up. And if I come, whoops. Come back here, you'll see that it's now phone app 14. If you see that icon that we saw earlier, and here's the tile, all of that stuff, and there's the splash screen. So all of that stuff just kind of works. So I'm gonna stop there. That's kind of your first Hello World application. Are you excited?
Very.
Not really, huh? Okay, sorry. Some of you are bored. So Silverlight is the primary framework, if you will, for building general purpose applications. It's really good at all sorts of different things. Stuff on the screen, it's really good at media, it's good at lists of stuff, database access. It's just really good for general purpose applications. On the other hand, XNA is a much better framework if you're building games. And so that's also included as part of the Windows Phone development tools. And so if you're building a 2D and 3D game, or 3D game, you can take advantage of XNA and you'll get all of the benefits of that. The other thing about XNA is that it targets not just Windows Phone, but this is actually version 4 of XNA. The previous versions were targeting the PC as well as Xbox. So you can write the same code and target either Xbox or Windows Phone or the PC. And in fact, Ian Christ will be here later today. He's gonna spend a lot of time. You guys are gonna be writing 3D games by the end of the day. Maybe not. We'll see. So when you define an XNA solution, it's a little different, and we'll talk about what the differences are. But every game, no matter what kind, how many people are writing games here today? Raise your hands a little higher. Okay, just a few. So you're probably familiar with the idea of a game loop, right? So Silverlight is event-driven. And so you're hooking into events, and then the events trigger, and your code behind gets run. XNA is a game framework, and so it has a game loop, as most game frameworks do. And so it has every game framework has a very predictable pattern where you initialize the engine, you load your resources, sounds, and graphics, and 3D models, and so on. You do something with the end user, you do some calculations, you test what's going on, and then you give feedback. You draw on the screen, and then you do it over again. And you're doing this really fast, right? This game loop is running, if you have a decent performance game, at least 30 frames per second. And then at some point, you exit, and you free up your resources. You let go of your video and all that good stuff. And so XNA does exactly that. There's a couple of events and methods that you override. There's an initialize method, which initializes, surprisingly. Load content, which loads content. Update, which is your calculations and trying to figure out where objects are on the screen. And once you figured that out, you draw them on the screen, and then you start over again. And you do this. XNA pretty much guarantees that you're gonna get a 30 frame per second loop on that. And it will do whatever it can to make sure that your application will run. And so let's actually see that. And we're gonna see a lot more of XNA later. Whoops. Just create a new application. And so here we were in Silverlight for Windows Phone. Now we're in XNA Game Studio. It's kind of the same, environment, but you'll see that what it creates is quite different. We're just going to call it Windows Phone Game 3. And again, you get to tell it what target. You're going to tell it 7.1. You'll see it's a little different. It has some things that are same, but you have a solution. But in this case, there's actually two projects in that solution, because that's the way XNA works. You have a project, which is your primary project, which is your code, and then you have another project, which is your content. That's where you put your models, that's where you put your images, that's where you put sound and all of that good stuff. And then you, as I said, you can sort of, if I come here and go to my program dot, no, that's not what I wanted. Here's game1.cs, and so you'll see here that it pretty much gives you everything you need to get started. So it's giving your initialization, and then loading content. In this case, it's not loading any content because it doesn't know what content to load. But this would be the procedure or sorry the method where you would load that, and then unload when you're exiting. And then here's the update state, which doesn't do anything except for check for the back button. And then there's a draw state, which doesn't do a whole lot right now, except draw the color blue. And there's a special color in XNA, which is referred to as cornflower blue. And I don't know what a cornflower is, but it's been there since version one, and it's kind of a tradition. So if we run this, we are gonna run an application. It's a very exciting application. Here's our first game. It's very easy to win this game. And all it's doing is it's drawing the background. You can't tell, but it's drawing that at 30 frames per second right now. So the performance is really good. So clearly you add to that to make your game. And we're going to do that later today. So as I mentioned, Silverlight is really good at some things, and XNA is really good at some things. And wouldn't it be great if you could do both, right? So if you think about your typical game, you have your gameplay where you have all sorts of objects running around the screen, bumping into each other, creating sounds, and users that are having fun. But you also have the stuff that's around that, things like menus, things like help screens, things like leaderboards, achievement lists, all of that good stuff. That's kind of hard to do in a game loop. And XNA only does a game loop. And so by combining the two, you can use Silverlight for all of that textual stuff, and you can use XNA for the gameplay. And there's actually a really good way to do that. And so here we're actually talking about that. So let me just skip forward to that. There's actually a class in Silverlight that takes advantage of that. There's actually a template that takes advantage of that and gives you pretty much everything you need to know. And it just makes building the user stuff, the user interface, just a lot easier. And in fact, if you're writing games, you know how much time you spend. You probably spend as much time writing the menuing stuff as you do writing the game. Silverlight just cuts that out of the equation and just makes it a lot easier. So let's actually see how that works. I'm going to try and spend as much time in code, less time in PowerPoint. Close that solution. Oh, it's still running, that's why. And so if I go to Silverlight or XNA, they're both there. There's a project template called Windows Phone Silverlight and XNA application. And basically what it does, and it's going to give us an application that's called SLXNA App 3 is what it's called. And it's going to look very similar to what we had. Except now we have three projects. We have one solution with three projects. Let me just give us some room here. Normally I have like a 30-inch monitor and having to kind of fit everything. Here we go. So we have one solution. In that solution, there's three projects. There's the Silverlight project, where most of the work is done. There's the XNA project, which is loaded as a library, as a DLL. And then there's your content, just like you had in XNA. And then there's a couple of pages. So if you look in the Silverlight project, there's a main page, which is the one we're looking at right now, which is, you can think of it as maybe your menu page or the first page you would see. And then there's the game page on XAML, which is where your XNA magic happens. And then everything else sort of feeds that. And so if I look at, this is pretty standard, right? We did this earlier. It's just a standard page with a change to game page, which just navigates to the game page. And we're going to talk about page navigation in a few minutes. And then if I go and load game page, it doesn't show anything, because everything, when you're in XNA, there is no visual canvas to draw on. Basically, XNA takes over the screen. Now, we're actually going to see later that if you want, you can actually use you can use Silverlight on an XNA screen, which is sometimes handy. You might want to put buttons on the screen. It's actually easier to do a button on an XNA screen using Silverlight than it is to use it with XNA, where you have to do it everything with graphics and loading fonts and all that stuff is really hard. But behind this, and so this is the first time we're looking at this, we were looking at the XAML, which is the visual representation. Behind that, there's something called the code behind. In my case, I'm using C#. You can also use Visual Basic. Some people even use F#. But anyway, you have full access. And so here, if you look at the game page, you'll see that it's actually in the Silverlight project. And so it's not actually an XNA project, but you'll see that there's, for everything that we saw in the XNA project, there's also a Silverlight equivalent. And so things like, let me just skip down. We saw that we had an update method here now, because Silverlight is event-driven, there's an on-update event that gets triggered, and you can hook into that and do all of your good stuff here. And we're going to see all of this later. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time. In fact, I probably already spent too much time on this. Let me just run it. And so here, I now have my Silverlight portion changed to game page. Now I'm looking at the XNA page, game page. Again, 30 frames per second of loop. Okay, so I know, it's exciting. Try to contain yourselves. So let's talk about the emulator. So you've seen me do some stuff with the emulator. The emulator is really cool. There's a question in the back.
When you make Silverlight and XNA, will it run in Xbox?
So the question was, if I mix Silverlight and XNA, will it run in Xbox and PC? And the answer is not really. The code that you're writing would, in theory, run in Xbox and PC, but there's no Silverlight XNA framework for Xbox, for instance. At least not that I know of. No, I know there isn't, actually. So the answer is no.
Well, you should be able to convert it for PC.
Yeah, the code is identical, right? Like I said, you have the same way you have an update method in XNA, which would run on Xbox and PC. In the Silverlight, you have an on-update. Same way you have a draw method in XNA, you have an on-draw in the Silverlight XNA project. So absolutely, the code is transferable, but you're going to have to be doing a lot of cut and paste, unfortunately. Especially if your project tends to get a little bit more sophisticated, where you have lots of objects that you're building, it could be a lot of work. Yes?
How would you deal with different screen sizes if you have images and so on?
So the question was, how do you deal with different screen sizes? How many screen sizes? Does anyone know how many screen sizes Windows Phone comes in?
One.
Just one. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to deal with screen sizes. Every Windows Phone since version 1 has been 800 by 480. So you don't.
That's
going to
be in the future also.
Well, the future is a long time.
Yeah. How would you deal in the future, for example? Let's say in 1 year you release a new screen.
Sorry?
In 1 year you have a new phone with a bigger screen, and what do you do?
So what would you, I'm not sure I understand the question.
If you're going to have a phone with a bigger screen than what you have now.
So for Silverlight, for instance,
yeah.
For XNA, for instance, as you can imagine, PC screens are much bigger than your phone screen, and so it's actually fairly easy to do. There's a way to actually tell XNA to scale it for you, and so it's actually pretty straightforward, very easy to do.
Okay.
I've seen games that were working on PC or Xbox transferred in less than a day onto the phone. First draft, of course.
Yeah.
I think I saw a hand over on this side. Did we answer your question? Okay, maybe not. Where was I? Oh, right, so the emulator. The emulator is pretty cool because it actually is the exact same stuff that we put on the phone is actually running on your PC. So the emulator is actually a virtual machine that's running the exact same set of code that we use to build the devices. So we're in code. Now, of course, there's all sorts of stuff that you have on devices that we don't have in the emulator. There are some limitations, but But for all intents and purposes, if you're writing something and it runs on the emulator, with very few exceptions, if it runs on the emulator, it's going to run on the device. And so that's really handy, because what that means is you can start developing today because you can get the emulator today for free. And of course, we encourage you to test on the device before you certify, before you publish. But you can do most of your development on the emulator. It's actually much faster to work on the emulator than it is to work on the device. There are some differences. One is you can't do media playback. So you can't play media on the emulator at the same time. You just have to test that on the device, unfortunately. And then the only application that's built in is the Internet Explorer. So you don't get Outlook and the calendar and the Picture Hub and the People Hub and the Zoom Player. The only thing, you'll see it in a couple seconds, is Internet Explorer. With the full HTML5, pretty much everything that you would expect. So even though it doesn't include the ability to make a phone call, if your app tries to make a phone call, there is some stubbed out code that will say, oh, would you like to make a phone call? And if you click OK, obviously there's no phone on your PC. Same thing if you're trying to access the address book. Even though you can't get to the address book, there are some sample addresses in the address book in the emulator. There's some sample photos in the emulator. You'll see this in a couple of minutes when we start playing with that. And the emulator, if you have a multi-touch Windows PC, like a regular Windows PC with multi-touch, you will actually be able to touch on the screen use the emulator as if it was a device. As you can imagine, that's pretty handy. Yes?
What about the keyboard? I tried yesterday when I typed on the keyboard.
So the question is, what about the keyboard? What if I have a keyboard on my PC? Some people do. Can I use the keyboard on the emulator? And you can. There's a special keystroke that you have to hit to actually access the keyboard. And it's either pause break or page up, depending.
There's the input. I can just write.
Yep. In fact, that's what I'm going to do because I don't want to click on the SIP, right, on the soft input panel. It can be pretty slow to type out a web address using the mouse. So, yeah, absolutely, you can use the keyboard. And in fact, there are some devices that actually have physical keyboards. None of the newer ones, but some of the older ones. There was a Dell device, there was an LG device, and an HTC device that had keyboards. Any other questions? Yeah, sure.
Use the keyboard to simulate touch.
So the question was, can you use the keyboard to simulate touch? I don't know what that means.
if you have the emulator and you don't have a touch screen, then you would like to use the touch.
You can't use the keyboard to emulate touch, but you can use your mouse to emulate touch.
Yeah, but if you have like 3 points or something like that, it saves.
Ah, so yeah, you can't do multi-touch with a mouse or the keyboard. Yeah, unfortunately not. Any other questions? You guys don't want to see this in action, right? You just want to ask questions? Yes?
Yeah, just talk about X-Nance and the line for development.
Yes?
Windows 8, you also have the option to do this install.
Right.
Will that be an option under this version?
So the question was, in Windows 8, we have the ability to build applications not just in Silverlight and XNA, but also in HTML and HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript. Will that be an option sometime in Windows Phone? And the answer is maybe. So we just released Windows Phone 7.5 about a month ago. It's the first phone started coming out. And so it's pretty early to be talking about what's coming in vNext. So you're not going to hear anything about vNext today. You can ask the questions. I can try and answer, but unfortunately, there's not really a lot I can say at this point. It's just way too early.
So one question. Mango is 7.5, but when you look at it, it says you choose 7.1.
Okay. Good question. It is a little bit confusing, so let me answer that. So the question was, you've been talking about Mango as being Windows Phone 7.5, and yet when you were building apps using the templates, it actually asked you whether you wanted 7.0 or 7.1. What's up with that? And the answer is that the SDK had a 7.0 and 7.1, and the runtime was 7.0 and 7.5. It's just a simple thing. I don't know what the reasoning is behind that, but it just is what it is. Okay?
Communication.
Yeah, those two teams, I guess.
It's not really Windows 7.5. It's still 7.1. If you look in the about in your phone, it do says Windows 7.1.77 something.
Okay. Let's keep going. Any other questions? At the back, was there a question? Or are you just scratching? Okay. Where are we going? So Windows Phone emulator capabilities. There are some things that you can't do. Performance is kind of hard to test on the PC, because the PC, as you can imagine, is much faster. You know, at the office, I have a quad-core 3-point-whatever gigahertz. My phone is not that fast, right? And so testing performance, you can't do that on the emulator. You can, but you just won't get a very good result. So clearly, as I said, most of your development, we strongly encourage that you do that on the emulator. It's much faster. But at some point towards the end of your project, you're definitely going to want to start testing more intensely on physical devices. There are some things that you can do in the emulator that you may not imagine. So for instance, things like camera. Even though you don't have a camera on your PC, we do give you the simulation of that, and I'll show you how that works in a few minutes. Location as well, even though your PC may not have a GPS or may not do triangulation with cell phone towers, we can do that for you, we can simulate, and also accelerometer simulation as well. And again, I'll show you that in a couple of minutes. And finally, as you're building your application, when you're publishing or perhaps as part of your spec writing or marketing, you may need screen grabs or screen captures of your apps, and the emulator allows you to do that. There's actually a tool to grab screen capture. And so rather than talk about it, maybe I should just show it. What do you think? So let me just bring up the emulator. And so here's the emulator. As I said, your emulator, when you install it and run it, is not going to look like Nokia. It's just going to look like the standard generic device with no branding or anything like that. But there are skins available on the internet, and like I said, because we're at Nokia today, I did that. So this is what my start screen looks like. In fact, if I tap and hold, get rid of that. So when you run your emulator, this is what you're going to see. The only app that's available by default is IE, and we do that because we want people to be using IE and to be testing their websites with IE, whether on the desktop or on mobile, and so we've made IE available for free. You just go and download it to do your testing of your web websites. Very handy to do that. We also have the app list and all of that good stuff. Let me see. So someone was asking earlier about the SIP. And so you see when I tap on something that requires text input, it's automatically launched this SIP, the soft input panel. And if I hit the page up key, the SIP disappears, but I can still type. So now I can type Nokia.com, and it should hopefully at some point load that. I guess the internet's a little slow right now. Anyway, maybe I broke the internet sometime earlier. Let's see, what else did I want to show? We talked about some of the other things. So for instance, you'll notice that when I hover, let me just move some of the stuff out of the way so that you can see what I'm doing. So here's my emulator. When I hover, you'll notice that there are some tools that appear on the top right-hand corner, and that allows me to do a number of things. Of course, there's a close and minimize and so on, but I can also do things like change the orientation of the device one way or the other, and I can do this either side. I can go zoom. Depending on the screen size. And then what's really handy is we can do things like this cool stuff. And so to do that, actually, let me just load some projects. Not this one. So I'm going to load a project that takes a photo. And so I'll show you how that runs in the emulator. It's just very, very simple project. And we won't even look at the code because we're going to do some of this stuff later. So here's my project. running somewhere. Here it is. And you'll see that there's a button there that says take picture. If I take a picture, it's actually available now. You can't see it, but if I tap on the screen, you can see it zoom and take a picture, and that's the picture it's taken. And actually what you'll see is that this box is actually randomly moving around the screen, and that's what you would get as your simulated photo, right? I can also do things like choose a picture. And I mentioned this earlier, even though you can't get to the Photos Hub, there are actually some sample photos in the emulator, and so I can choose a photo and just choose anyone, and there's my picture page that I just did, right? So pretty straightforward. It works as you would expect, except there's no photo that you actually take with the camera, because you don't have a camera on your laptop or on your PC. The other one I wanted to show was location. And so here it's showing me latitude and longitude of something. And actually it's showing me the latitude and longitude of Seattle, which is the default location in the emulator. That's not going to be useful when you're doing your application. And so if I open up my handy additional tools, I can go to the location tab, and you'll see I have a map here, and you'll see that I can actually give it a different location. And so I can zoom out. And then, whoops, a little too far off the screen. And then come over and zoom in. And somewhere is, anyone know what the latitude and longitude for Copenhagen are? Where is it? There it is. It's here somewhere, right? So, and you'll see, yeah, you're right, very good. So you can do that, right? Which is pretty handy, because if you're testing an app that requires location, in some of the competitive platforms, if you're doing an app, you actually have to go outside and walk around to test your app. And of course, we encourage you to do that with physical devices, with Windows Phone as well. But when you're in development, it's pretty handy to be able to say, oh, here's my location. The other thing we can do with location is we can actually record data. So for instance, if I'm building a navigation application where I don't have single points, I may have 3,000 points, right? And so you can actually record data, your own data. I have some that I've recorded. And so here's some that I've recorded that are actually in the UK. And so if I zoom in here, I have 3 points, 4 points. And now I have 4 points that are loaded, and now I can tell it fire a change in the GPS every 1 second. And if I hit play here, it's pretty handy. And every time it changes, obviously, I'm getting a different lat and long. So this is pretty handy when you're doing that sort of thing. Any questions on that? Did you guys know this already? Am I boring you? Okay. All right. Some people said no, so I'm going to take that to mean, good job, Ben. All right. Last one is the accelerometer. And so here's the accelerometer again. And then this time, obviously, we're looking at a different page on the additional tools. And now this time, you see that red dot in the middle. If I grab that and move it, you can see how I can change the orientation of the device. And by doing that, I'm getting different X, Y, and Z things. And I can do things like change the orientation. There are certain preset orientations. And just like we have in location recorded data, you might do the same thing with the accelerometer. So for instance, in this case, there's a default called shake. And so if I play that, it's just a whole bunch of, I think it's 5 seconds worth of someone shaking the device, and you have the accelerometer, whatever the accelerometer readings are for that. Any questions? Yes?
Yeah,
can you do a recording with a phone and then play that over and over in the simulation?
So the question is, can I do a recording on the phone and then play it over and over in the simulator, in the emulator? The answer is yes, but there's no tool to allow you to do that. So my understanding, I haven't actually done this, but those pre-recorded are just XML files. And so you can just create an XML file with anything you want. So for instance, if I wanted to record my own different type of shake, or maybe I have other things that I might want to use for testing, I would record that to an XML file, pull it off the device, and then put it into the emulator. Pretty handy. Or I could just hand code it in XML if that's what I wanted. There was a question over here as well? Same question, okay. Any others? Yes, in the back.
Is there any way to get the emulator to come up in front of Visual Studio when sending a file?
So the, to come up in front of what?
Say COVID, be shown.
Ah, so the question, okay, so you may have noticed that when I hit run on my application, the emulator starts and then Visual Studio starts. And what's happening there is that the emulator is starting and then Visual Studio is hooking into the debugger so that you're debugging. And so, not really. The easiest way to do that is what most developers do is they have very large screens, or two screens, or three, or four, or, you know, so yeah, unfortunately not. Any other questions? Yes?
Sorry, I need to interrupt just 1 minute.
Oh, sure.
You have three cars parked not so well. It's a BMW with CF5978, and another BMW with ZP33185, and finally a Mercedes BW 42966. And they can have a fine if they're not moved.
They're BMWs, they can afford it.
Sorry to interrupt.
Okay, any other questions? Oh, the other thing I mentioned was screenshots, and so let's just take a quick screenshot. There's a separate additional tool there, and this is a pretty boring screenshot, but basically what you do is you hit capture, and if that's the screenshot you like, you hit save, and you can save it anywhere you want as a PNG file. Pretty straightforward. And it would save it as a full resolution image, 800 by 480, so you get exactly what you need for Marketplace, for instance, for your, because you do need screenshots for Marketplace when you publish. Any questions on the emulator? Yes, in the back. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. The small checks on the right side. Oh, the text. Oh, good. Thank you for bringing that up. Thank you. That's a really good question. So some of you may have noticed that there's some text in the top right-hand corner. That's really handy to know. This is essentially performance information. That's what's going on with your app. Things like frame rate and all sorts of good stuff. So right now I think I'm at 44 frames per second, which is pretty good. And it's really handy. Of course, you don't want that in your production app. You will only see that in debug mode. So for instance, if I exit out of this app, it's this one, I hit stop, and now I go to release, and now I hit run, come back to the, and it's still there. Okay. Accelerometer demo, right? Come on up, see if you can read. You see, I just loaded another one. I don't know where the other one is, but you'll see that I loaded the location app, and the debugger is not attached to it, and so you don't see the text. Okay. So you do want, absolutely you want that. You can turn it off, there's a place to do it. I think it's in the app.xaml, sorry, the app.cs. And so you can turn it off if you want. I wouldn't. It's really handy information to have. Yeah. Oh, for screenshots, yeah, good point. Yeah, so you just run it and you can still take a screenshot even though the debugger's not attached. Did I see another question here?
What about the audio? Can you do anything with the audio?
Audio. What kind of things?
The emulator. If you set a headphone on the computer. So.
What kind of audio? What would you want to do?
If you set a headphone on the computer, can you?
So if I play something, yeah, you will hear the audio playing. You don't need a headset. You
take a microphone.
Microphone you can't do. There's no microphone in play. Any other questions?
How about webcam on your phone?
Webcam on that's the camera, and the way it works is it's simulated. So it doesn't actually use your webcam, it uses a simulator. All because right. There's no standard webcam, it's just the simulator.
Can you simulate lock screen?
Can you simulate?
The lock screen.
The lock screen.
And the emulator. So if I have an app, can I?
Yeah.
I
don't know. That's a really good question. I have no idea. I've never tried that. Email me and I'll check. There's probably a way to do it, but no one's ever asked me that before. So, and I've never tried it, so I have to go and email me and I'll get you the answer. Can I mention earlier my email address for those of you that came in earlier? Benriga, BENRIGA, at Microsoft.com. Please feel free if you remember a question tomorrow or next week. And I'm not around because I won't be in Copenhagen next week. Please feel free to email me. And of course, the at Ben Riga for Twitter. Please follow me on Twitter. Any other questions on the emulator? No? All right, let's keep going. How are we doing on time? We're late again. Well, I guess we started late, so that would make sense. Okay. Debugging. I know most of you don't have bugs, but for the rest of us that have bugs, debugging is really handy, and Visual Studio has what I would say an exceptional debugging experience. Anything you could possibly want to know about your app while it's in motion, while it's running, you have access to it. And so the same debugger that you have access to when you're writing all those great Windows apps or web apps, you have access to in Windows Phone. The same debug experience, you basically Visual Studio connects to the emulator and gives you all of that good info. If you're debugging on a device, Visual Studio will connect to the device and give you the same access. So it gives you pretty much everything you need to know. All of the various stuff, I mean, that's just a small sampling of things you can do. You know, breakpoints and single stepping and stepping over, stepping into, viewing, modifying variables. Pretty much anything you can imagine, you can do. As you can imagine, we have a lot of experience with code, and you get all of the benefits of that when you're building your Windows app. The other thing that you have access to is profiling, and this is really handy on a phone device because you have limited resources on those handy little devices, and so you have to make sure that you're very efficient in how you use them, because if you don't, your end users will give you bad ratings in the marketplace, and then you won't sell as many apps, and you won't make as much money, and then you'll have to go and write Android apps. And we're going to see this earlier, later. There's a performance analysis tool, or a profiler, and it basically samples what's going on in your app while it's in the emulator or while it's in the device. It will actually figure out what's going on, take samples, and then pull that back into Visual Studio and give it to you in a nice graphical way. And so rather than talk about it, that's what it's gonna look like. But rather than talk about it, before we talk about that, there is one thing you need to know. When you get a device from your mobile operator, that device is locked. Of course, it's locked to a mobile operator most often, and you can unlock that for when you go to a different country and so on. But it's also developer locked. That means that unless you unlock the device, you can't sideload an application to it. And so when you register in App Hub, and I think, Martin, are you here? You will actually be able to, I think there's some tokens. So for people, how many people are already on App Hub? Only a few. How many people are not on App Hub? Okay, so I think we have some tokens for people that are not on, so we can talk about that later. Especially for people that are coming tomorrow for the coding portion, you'll be able to register and get all of that good stuff. And as part of registering for App Hub, you have the ability to unlock phones. You can unlock up to 3 devices. And if you get a student account, students have free access to AppHub as part of a different Microsoft program called DreamSpark. Students can unlock 1 device. If you, as a professional developer, have more than 3 devices, some people have larger teams than 3, it is possible to get more. You just submit a support request. In AppHub, you submit a request with your reason why, and more likely than not, you'll have that increased. But it is a manual thing you have to do. Did I mention create.msen.com? That's where you get everything. Again, that's a really important one. If you're doing Windows Phone development, you're going to go there very often. Is that Martin in the back? So tomorrow we're going to have tokens for people that are coding, right? Yeah. Okay, great. So loaner phones, right. So there will be some Nokia Lumia 800s, really cool. Probably one of the cooler devices you can play with. You'll get a chance to play with those tomorrow. I saw them partying with those yesterday.
Small note on that. If anybody provides an SIM card, don't
provide
yourself with a SIM.
Okay. We get to keep the SIM? Was there anything else, Martin? What's that? Lunch? I think we're about maybe 5 minutes. We kind of went a little long on the first session, so yeah. Let's see. So we talked about unlocking a device. There is actually, I didn't talk about it. There is a, once you register on AppHub, you use a Windows Live ID to do that. And then as part of the Windows Phone Developer Tools, there is actually a tool in the Developer Tools. It's just a desktop app that you run where you enter your Live ID and your password, you connect your device, and then you basically register your device, which is unlocking it. Click the register button, it connects to the device, it unlocks it, and tells you successfully unlocked. And as soon as it's done that, you can deploy. Now, most times when you're deploying in Visual Studio, you may have noticed at the top, just a second, you may have noticed at the top that I had set emulator. So when I hit run, it was automatically deploying to the emulator. I can set that to be device, and then it will just look for the first device that you have connected up and deploy to the device, and you get all the same benefits, except you're running on a physical device. You're still connected to the debugger and all that stuff. Now, sometimes you may have a zap that someone has sent you. Maybe you're a tester or you're another developer, and so there's actually a deployment tool available. That actually will deploy the zap directly to the device without having to use Visual Studio. Was there a question in the back? Say that again? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Does it reset the phone? No. Oh, so the question was, if I developer unlock or register the device, is that going to reset my phone? Absolutely not. It's just, I think it's just a registry setting or something. I don't know what it's doing behind the scenes. Probably putting down a certificate or two and double checking what's going on AppHub, but it does not touch anything on the device. Perfectly safe to do that even on your own personal device. Any other questions? So let's actually have a look at the debugger. And best way to do that is with an app that's broken. And so this is a pretty fancy app. It's very sophisticated. Let's run it. And so this app is, like I said, I did my PhD thesis on this one. It adds 2 numbers together. You would think that they would be pretty easy to do. So let's actually run that. And so I'm going to run this and say 2 + 2. Anyone want to guess what the answer is here? 5? Someone said 5? Okay, so it's going to give me, whoops. So I'm going to do that later. So it gives me 4, right? Pretty exciting. What if I change this to 3? Anyone want to guess what it's going to give me? 6. Now how's that work, right? So there's a problem there, so we should try and debug that. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into Visual Studio, And there's a, if I come to mainpage.xaml, let me set this, there is the equals button, right? So that's the event that's being triggered. So if I double click on that, it's going to take me to the equal button click, and that's going to the calculate result. And so here is the calculate result. I'm going to put a, just by clicking here, I'm putting a breakpoint there. So if I run this again, someone's peeking. Don't ruin the surprise. So if I go here and I type 3 + 2 again and hit equals, now I can do a few things. So for instance, as I move around, you'll see that as I hover over V1, it's giving me the result of V1. If I hover over result, it's giving me 6. If I hover over V2, it's telling me it's 3, even though I type 2. Anyone see what the problem is? Okay, that was too easy, I guess. Anyway, so basically I'm taking the same number here, but the idea here is that you have full access to a lot of things, including, for instance, if I go to my immediate window and say, well, V2 should be equal to 2. And now if I go over V2, V2 is now, come on now, here it is, now it's 2. And now it can run, and why is that?
You have to
Oh, because it's already too late. Yeah, you're right. So now I can say the result is 7. Getting the breakpoint at the wrong spot. Yep. Now. The breakpoint yet. Okay. That's clever. Okay. And now if I run. Right. Pretty excited, right? So that's debugging. It's pretty straightforward. You can do all sorts of good stuff, things like
but adding a meta instead of an numerics.
Say that again? So that's a really good question. So what happens if I type this? Right? So this is an exception, and actually it's one of the examples we'll do later. So when we get into some of the other good stuff, we're going to spend some time on that in Silverlight. Okay? Was there another question? This was pretty trivial, right? I think some of the Visual Studio guys are probably rolling their eyes going, oh my God. Is this guy for real or what? So let's just load another app. It's just an app that kind of tests. Just run the app. And so, that was the last time that I ran it last night. So here, instead of running the app directly, I'm going into the debug menu and I'm going to start the Windows Phone performance analysis. Right? And so here it's asking me a couple of different things. I can choose execution analysis or memory analysis. So depending on what the problem is that you're trying to solve for. So if you're having performance issues, you're going to go for execution analysis. If you're having memory issues, so for instance, if your app is going above 90 megabytes, it's going to get rejected from the marketplace. You won't be able to publish your application, and so you need to track that. This is a really handy way for you to figure out where am I going over on memory, or if I'm feeling performance issues, maybe my scroll is lagging or whatever, it will do that. Now, so if I launch this app, and the app doesn't really do a whole lot, except takes lots and lots of photos, right? So here's the camera simulator, right? So there's actually two cameras that are being simulated. the first one, and then the second one is actually doing some, it's taking the image that's coming back and doing some processing around it. And then at some point, I'm going to say, okay, I think I have enough data now. And so now I'm going to say stop profiling. So in the background, you can see it's profiling. Basically, it's collecting. So if I stop profiling, we have maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 seconds. Now, typically, what you would be doing is actually running your app, right? You wouldn't be actually, you wouldn't be just running. And then now it gives me some information about my app. It's giving me frame rate. So you can see I was kind of pegging the meter, doing pretty well. And then in some cases, I wasn't doing so well. And so depending on what you're doing. And now you're looking at seconds. And so sometimes it can be hard to do that. And so you can actually zoom in a little bit and figure out what's going on at different times. You can look at memory usage. There's actually more stuff here. See that G? That's where the garbage collector kicked in at some point. We didn't notice it, but it was there. And so, especially in a game, that's kind of handy when you want to know. Sometimes you see a hiccup in a game, you want to figure what, why did it just stop there for a split second and then start up again? Those are the kinds of things you want to detect and avoid, especially in gaming. And so there's all sorts of cool stuff. So for instance, if I come over here and say, what happened over here? See how it's giving me some warnings. It's telling me native memory allocations are dominating the working set, considering rerunning with the memory option. So you're having some memory issues here. You ran the execution profiler, so you should run the memory profiler, and then let's have a look at what the memory looks like. I'm kind of out of time, so I'm not gonna do it here, but you get the idea. And then if I look at different parts of the program, it's gonna give me different warnings. Sometimes there are no warnings. Right? And then moderate CPU usage by system threats. So it's kind of, you're seeing some issues, maybe they're not so bad, but that gives you a pretty good idea of what the profiler can do for you. Again, I would encourage you to use it, it's especially once you're getting towards the end of your application. It's really handy right before you're ready to submit. You're going to get some surprises when you run the profiler. You're going to see all sorts of things that you didn't know were happening and will actually speed up your application. I think you were first, and then, yeah.
Is it possible to put in some kind of debug labels in this, that this is where my calculation started, this is where it ended?
No, I don't think so. So the question, sorry, for the question for the recording, is it possible to put in a debug label so that I can zero in on different parts of my processing or different processes, and I don't think you can do that.
So in my experience in doing Silverlight and WGM app development, a lot of the performance issues you run into is actually not your own code, but complexities in your layout and the rendering of the layouting of your visual layouts.
Yep.
And those are also very interesting to be able to analyze. Do Windows Phone SDK have anything that helps you with that?
Well, okay, so the question was, from past experience, you have seen that in Silverlight and WPF, the performance issues are not so much in your code, but in how you're using things like layout, or maybe having too much complexity on the screen at one time, or overlays, and what have you. And so your question, I think, was, how do I fine-tune that?
What tooling support do you have for Windows Phone?
So the profiler is going to show you where your issues are, and then it's up to you to drill down and figure out, okay, so if the issue is in this particular piece of code, what do I do about that? Right. It's not going to show you what the specific problem is.
It's going to assign some DLO that's
correct.
Essentially, no, not what am I doing?
Well, yeah, but you have an idea. If you're having an issue with a particular page, it will drill down and give you an idea exactly where it is you're going to have that particular issue. So we're out of time here. Actually, we're 15 minutes over. I'm sure some of you are probably a little bit hungry. And actually, I think we're done. Actually, I think we're going to stop there. That's just a summary slide. So we're going to stop there. A little bit late. I apologize for that. We got too excited when we were doing the consumer demo, so I apologize for that. We're going to have some lunch, and then I think we're going to come back. I don't know. I don't have an agenda, so I don't know what time. But I'll be here when I should be here. How's that? Thank you.